So we're going to move to the transportation sector. And our speaker now is Cesar Quiroga. He's a senior research engineering at Texas A&M Transportation Institute, TTI. This is part of the Texas A&M University system.
Make this work. Can you hear me? All right. Well, thank you so much for this opportunity. Let me just start by emphasizing that just about everything we do in transportation has to do with externalities and how in transportation we really try to internalize those things that otherwise would be treated as externalities. I probably need to change the pointer here. And in the interest of time and also try to provide as much meaningful information to the group, let me just mention that I will talk about five things. One is, how much does it really take to develop a well in terms of transportation resources? What are the impacts? Now, we could talk about many modes of transportation, but let me just focus this on highways, right? So it's essentially pavement impacts and the related set of impacts that has to do with crashes and safety. And then talk about some of the things that we're doing, or in general that academia is doing and also the industry is doing, and finalize with some needs and some ideas moving forward. So, how much traffic is needed to develop a well? We have been trying to answer this question for a number of years and looking at a number of resources. It really varies. So what you see here on the screen is the result of some inquiry that we have done over several years, looking at surveys, questions to the industry, some limited field data. And basically what you see here is sort of a summary in terms of number of heavy truckloads that you need to develop a well. One thing that comes to mind is that not every region is the same. And so if you look at the Barnett Shale, for instance, and if you look at the number at the bottom, think of this big number, 1,000 trucks, right? Or truckloads, rather. In the Eagle Ford Shale, we have come to the conclusion that to develop a well, you need more trucks. And in the Permian Basin, you would need fewer trucks. Now, if you were to try to identify how many trucks you need per phase, right? Of course, the first thing that comes to mind is that you have to develop the pad, right? The pad site. You have to drill the site. You have to then apply, the fracking. And the previous presentation was talking about water use. And what you see here is that really the bulk of the resources that need in terms of transportation is related to fracking operations. And then, of course, you have, the completion and so on and so forth. Now, that's to develop a well. You also have another phase which has to do with the operation of the well. And this is where it gets really dicey, right? Because we just don't know. You know, it could be as few as 66 per well per year, or it could be as much as 400. And all of this has to do with how recent the formation or the basin or the play is. If you have pipeline networks, then it stands to reason that all of that is going to be carried. A lot of that is going to be carried by pipe. But if you don't have that, like what we had in the Eagle Ford, that only now the pipeline network is being developed, then you're going to need more trucks. Now, there is a lot of talk about refracking, and of course, we don't know whether this is going to happen. But if it does happen, then you have a large number of trucks potentially. All right? Now, for the measurement of the impact, we don't really just talk about trucks. We try to convert that to a unit that we can understand, and that unit is called equivalent single axle load. Without going into a lot of detail, is the load resulting from an axle that is 18,000 pounds in weight. And so we convert all of the number of trucks, the front axles, all of that information into an equivalent number. And that's what you see here on the screen. So remember the 1,000 trucks that we had for the Barnett Shale and the 1,500 trucks for the Eagle Ford? We'll convert all of that to easels, right? And what you see here on the right is, keep in mind this big number, 5,000 easels or as much as 15,000 easels. So that's a big reference number. In the Permian Basin, we might need something in between. Now, of course, these are just estimates. Keep this in mind because what happens is, can we move this? The critical reality is that the transportation network where all of these developments are taking place was never designed to withstand those heavy loads. So if you were to take an FM road, for instance, it could probably be designed for, say, 750,000 easels. So if you divide 750,000 by the number of easels you think you'll need, one well might be consuming enough pavement so that pavement could last for, 15 to 50 years. But you don't have one well. You could have hundreds of wells. And that explains very quickly why we have the impact that we have experienced, right? You can see things like this. You could see things like this. This is a county road. You could see things like this. And we could go on and on and on. The impact is not just the roadbed, but it's also the roadside. So in this situation, what we see is an entrance to a disposal facility. And even though this is paved, but you notice here that you have evidence of tire tracks affecting the roadside. So it's a composite impact. This is one of my favorite pictures. This is from West Texas. We happened to be driving by and looked at the site. It had rained the day before. It's a realization that you had, mud tracks when that is not supposed to happen. But it's also evidence that you have not just impact on the pavement structure, but also impact to the roadside. In this case, of course, is evidence that the driveway, which was probably not even permitted, right, was not treated or prepared accordingly to support the heavy traffic associated with the energy development. So it's a combination of impacts. But it's not just the legal loads, right? One of the things that, and people have been trying to visualize the impact. Some people talk about that one heavy truck is equivalent to 8 million passenger cars. I prefer to look at it the other way around because, as all of us know, the impact, really, when you're talking about the impact on pavement, it is the result of a lot of heavy traffic. And why is that? Well, it turns out that the relationship between weight, right, the ratio, the impact of the weight on pavement structure is not linear. And so if you were to look, and this is just for a reference, with respect to, say, an empty vehicle, weighing 4,000 pounds, and if you were to look at the impact of a truck, that this is the legal limit in Texas, 80,000 pounds, by the way. So the weight ratio is 8.8, right? But the impact ratio on the pavement structure is almost 600 times. Now, let's look at it from a different perspective. Let's assume an empty truck, right, weighing roughly about 35,000 pounds. Now, let's see what happens when that that truck is fully loaded. It's roughly about 2.3, right? But the impact ratio is 31 times. That kind of gives you an idea of why the traffic is having so much impact on the pavement structure. Now, this is up to 80,000 pounds. What happens if you have overweight loads, right? The legal limit in Texas for overweight permits is 5% or 84,000 pounds. And so with respect to that limit, 80,000 pounds, if you go to 84,000, the increment is what, 5%? But the increment in pavement impact is 20%. Now, if you go to up to 100,000 pounds, the increment is 25%, but the increase in the impact is what, 40%. We have seen some trucks weighing 150,000 pounds. So that kind of gives you an idea. For energy development, the cranes are pretty heavy. And so, it's really not surprising why you have that kind of impact when you're dealing with energy developments. Now, I mentioned at the beginning that all of this is about externalities, right? And so we have made some calculations as to what the impact is in terms of the pavement, right? And just looking at the secondary network, we calculated a few years ago that in areas of the state where there are energy developments, unconventional energy developments, that the impact was about $1 billion per year, only on state-maintained roads. Later, we expanded the analysis to cover local roads and county roads, and we concluded that it was about $2 billion without including bridges. But this is just the cost of the infrastructure. The cost of the industry is quite significant as well. We completed a preliminary analysis that was looking at the added wear and tear and mechanical damage to the vehicles. and concluded that this added cost was anywhere from $1.5 to $3.5 billion per year. Compare that to the state appropriations, because remember, it's about money, right? And what you can see here, I don't need to explain this to anybody, is that here we have the needs, the unmet needs, and here we have the state of the appropriations. Where is the money going to come from to resolve the reality that the pavement is being consumed? And that's a very big question that I think we will probably need to be addressing in terms of one of the research needs that we're going to have to address. But that's only one of the impacts. What about safety? Safety is one of those interesting elements because historically, over the last few decades, the state has made tremendous progress in terms of reducing the number of crashes. It's not just in Texas, it's throughout the country. And so when you look at some numbers, and I apologize for how crowded this chart is, but it is on purpose. If you look at the top left, right, this is in the three main regions of the state, and we identified the counties, and then we looked at the rest of the state. Where you see green, this was over two four-year periods, 2006 to 2009 and 2010 to 2013. We picked 2009 as a threshold because that's when the boom started, right? At the same time, something interesting happened up in the Burnett Shale, which is around 2006-07 is when the peak gas production happened. And so it was actually quite interesting what we observed. So when you look at the overall number of crashes that happened in the state, it's green between the two, meaning that from 2006, 2009, and then 2010, 2013, there were fewer crashes, which is good news, right? Except, there was a 1% increase in the Eagle Ford. All right, not so bad. Here's the reality. When we started to look at the locations where the development happened, not just on all of the regions, but more toward the rural side, and particularly when we were considering commercial vehicles, that is heavy trucks, you start to see the greens turning red. And then you also see that as the seriousness of the crashes, that is, as you kind of filter the crash severity, and only, for instance, considering fatal crashes, then you see almost red. Basically providing a very strong argument to the reality that the frequency of crashes, the crash rates, and the fatality rate is much more severe in areas where you have energy developments. There are many reasons for that. Right? We also looked at things like contributing factors, and it turns out that being drunk is not one of them. Under the influence is not one of them. 40% of the crashes, the responding officer could not identify the cause, meaning probably that it was infrastructure related. Okay, narrow roads and things like that. So. And this is some of the counties where the crash rate seem to be higher, and it doesn't really matter how you look at it, depending on the crash rate. But here's something else that we did. Remember that we had three sets of data. So let me see if we can do this. This is in the Eagle Ford Shale, and we looked at those four year periods. And we noticed very interestingly that there was a very positive correlation, strong correlation between an increase in the horizontal wells and the number of fatal crashes or serious crashes, right? But we also had the case of the Barnett Shale where, remember, the peak was in 2006. Well, over the same period of time, there was a reduction. And what was interesting is that it was fairly linear. So kind of by accident, we discovered that unless other things happened, we can predict if there is another boom. We can predict how many fatal crashes will likely happen. And so we developed this simple linear model that could be used to predict that. Now, we converted all of this into money. Again, why money? Well, because, again, transportation improvement projects are based on available funding. So we looked at two metrics, economic costs and comprehensive costs. And what's interesting, regardless of what the numbers show, is that the impact in terms of crashes could probably be between $50 and $100 million a year. All right? Remember the available funding that we talked about before. So that kind of gives you an idea of what we're talking about. Okay, very quickly, initiatives that we have been working on. At TTI, we have an agreement with TxDOT in terms of providing reports, providing guidelines to help maintain the state highway network. It's also the Texas Research Program that has funded a few research projects to evaluate techniques and otherwise understand the issue better. There is a policy center that we have actually been using to produce some of these reports. A couple years ago, we came up with a roadmap for transportation research related to energy development. And so very briefly on this, the cooperative agreement between TxDOT and TTI has resulted in a number of things, primarily in the form of reports, guidelines, implementation reports, and so on. We are right now working on a modeling tool, basically using travel demand forecasting techniques. And basically the idea is that we take all the pieces of information that are available, beginning with the location of the wells and all, more importantly, where the locations might be in the future, looking at the impact in terms of the weight characterization of the trucks, looking at the number of trucks that are needed. We combine all of that, put it in a GIS format, and then basically come up with maps. And basically these maps, and this is just to give you an idea of what it is. So if you imagine one well location, right, we look at it, what the impact is in terms of easels over 20 years, because that's really how we do it. And so you look at the impact when you have one well, right? This is Karnes County, by the way. This is the impact when you have 10 wells. And if you notice, then how the color is changing. And then 100 wells, 200 wells, 490 wells, which are the wells that were developed in 1 year, 2013. And this one will give you an idea of which corridors are more likely to be affected, which, you know, from a policy perspective is invaluable because you can really focus on those corridors where the need is most acute. The strategic research roadmap framework that I mentioned was the result of several workshops that were conducted a couple of years ago. We went around the state. We met with the folks in San Antonio, up in the Fort Worth area, and also in Midland. And we basically invited leaders of the community, transportation, planning officials, the industry consultants. And basically the idea was to try to identify what areas were important from a research point of view. The result of all of that was some 22, 23 research ideas that we then developed into a research needs statement. And we also came up with an anticipated, you know, budget number. The total program that we thought would be sufficient to address the needs from a transportation perspective was probably about $9 million. That's what we thought. So major takeaways. Number one is, which is really not surprising, developing a well requires extraordinarily high numbers of truckloads. That is a given, and of course one of the things that we have been doing is try to characterize that. Most existing roads and bridges in the state were never designed to withstand this kind of load. Another one is that one of the results of this humongous increase in traffic has been an increase in traffic safety issues. And the last one, of course, is funding. You know, by and large, funding is a significant issue. And I think that's pretty much what we concluded, you know, and that's what's going to be in the report. In terms of needs, I mentioned this 20 research roadmap, but if you try to identify which areas are the most critical ones, I think we could probably summarize it in terms of these. You know, the first one is related to a better characterization of where the needs are, basically knowing where the anticipated impact will be. The issue of building and maintaining integrated multimodal infrastructure strategies and solutions. It's always the top of our priority list. You know, where is the big need? And the last one is a reliable and sustainable funding mechanism to address those needs in the future. And I think that's it.
Okay. So we have time for questions.
You reached the conclusion that the truck crashes have led to more severe accidents. And I was looking at the data. I was thinking you had increases in accidents, an increase in severity. But can you separate out what might have happened as a result of increases in road miles due to a lot more economic activity and a lot more individuals in a rural area as opposed to truck traffic?
I'm not sure I understand the question. But let me.
You're saying that these, I presume, involve all crashes, and so it, you know, we now have twice as many people in a rural area, five times as many road miles, and so. But on your conclusion, you referred specifically to trucks. Are these separating out trucks?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, actually, here what you see is different sections of the table affect or include different types of vehicles. Okay. So this one, for instance, is every kind of vehicle, right? This column right here, CMV, is only those crashes that involved trucks, right? So by comparing the two, you can immediately isolate the effect, right? And not just in terms of the type of vehicle, but also where it happened. You know, whether it was urban or, well, in this case, rural or urban. In different report, we have the characterization of the two. And then what happens when you have those crashes that involve both trucks in a rural setting, which is where most of the development takes place. And also here is basically all the crashes, but then here you have only those crashes that were more serious, right? And then here only those that are fatal. Why fatal? Well, because that's what appears in the front of the newspaper. And that's the reality. Right?
Another question.
I was just curious, when you put up the loads in the different areas, why is it that the Eagleford Shale has such a much higher number? And it's mainly, I think, for liquid transportation, right?
Yeah, for water. One of the reasons, and I think I mentioned briefly this, is the availability or lack of infrastructure to carry those liquids. And I didn't mention this, but one thing that is happening, and again, in the Eagle Ford region than in other parts of the state, is the use of temporary water lines. You may have seen these water lines by the side of the road. Well, it's not by accident, because even though water is relatively cheap compared to other elements, the reality is that it costs money to transport water. And so what the industry has figured out is that if they can move things by water by pipeline as opposed to truck, they can save some money. One of the positive results has been less impact on the pavement structures. So if you go to Karnes County, you don't see as many trucks now as what you saw maybe just 4 or 5 years ago.
Another question. It's a great example, though, of what we're learning in Texas. We learn by doing here.
Yeah.
Somebody else. I would just say a lot of those liquids transported, correct me if I'm wrong, in Eagle Ford are the produced oil.
Yes. Every time we have water, water, oil, and gas. And so, and if you don't have the infrastructure, well, you have to use trucks for that.
Yeah, exactly. Anybody else? Okay, well, let's give Cesar a big hand.
Okay.